Chapter 16, The Method of a Lesson, Part 1. A renewing vision and philosophy of education must lead to an applied method. In every case, the reading should be consecutive from a well-chosen book. Before the reading for the day begins, the teacher should talk a little and get the children to talk about the last lesson with a few words about what is to be read, in order that the children may be animated by expectation. But she should be aware of explanation and especially of forestalling the narrative. Then she may read 2 or 3 pages, enough to include an episode. After that, let her call upon the children to narrate, in turns, if there be several of them. They not only narrate with spirit and accuracy, but succeed in catching the style of the author. The book should always be deeply interesting, and when the narration is over, there should be a little talk, in which moral points are brought out, pictures are shown to illustrate the lesson, or diagrams drawn on the blackboard. From Charlotte Mason, Home Education. Charlotte Mason's 5-step method of a lesson. First, a well-chosen book. Second, the first little talk. Third, an episode is read. Fourth, the episode is narrated. Fifth, the second little talk and student response.
Just as the human body needs nourishment and exercise to flourish, so the human mind. It needs the nourishment of ideas, but it also needs exercise. In exercising, the mind attends, it reflects, and it uses that which it is learning. So it attends to a text, and that text could be written. Most frequently at school it is, but not exclusively. The text could also be a flower. It could be an insect. It could be a bird. The text could be a symphony, a great piece of art. The mind does the work of attending. And then, having attended, it does the work of reflecting upon that which it has attended. We might think of the first part being getting what was in the text out of the text and into my mind. Having attended and assimilated the text, I now do the work of reflecting upon that text. What precisely are the ideas here? How does the author see? And how is my sight being transformed and enhanced?
A well-chosen book, high literary quality, idea rich, inspires and casts vision, expands horizons, enlarges understanding.
If ideas are the nourishment of the mind, then, as Charlotte Mason says, a morning without an idea is a morning wasted. This is what Charlotte Mason means when she speaks of a living curriculum. It's the kind of curriculum that's idea rich. And to be idea rich, it has to be both diverse and plentiful. So many subjects, math, science, history, literature, nature study, picture study, composer study, music and art, handcrafts, and what we call real work. So you learn something. There are ideas that get communicated when you're doing chores. Ideas about who you are in relation to the space in which you live. One of the wonderful things about this place is that children want to be here. They come and delight in learning. That's natural. We all delight in real learning when we're being fed upon ideas. And what we seek to do, and what Charlotte Mason sought to do, was put the best minds before students in a way that their mind could be nourished by the ideas that were being shared through the best minds, and thereby their way of seeing and hearing expanded, their apprehension of the good, true, and beautiful could be increased. All of this together composes a living curriculum. And just as the body needs 3 square meals a day, so the mind needs at least 3 square meals a day.
The first little talk or setup. Prepare students to engage the text. dialogue with students, explain new vocabulary, lead their attention, animate expectation, review.
Who can raise their hand and tell me who we're studying in composer study? Abigail. Beethoven, that's right. And what do we know so far? Where is Beethoven? Where was he from?
I think it was France or Europe.
Okay, he's in Europe, but France is, now that's a good, we're also studying Monet, and he is from France. Where is Beethoven from?
We have our literature books in front of us, and we've been reading about Mr. Bowditch and his journeys. He's on his way. Where is he heading right now on the Astrea?
Isn't he heading to Manila? Mm-hmm.
Does he still use mathematics?
Yes, he does.
Every day, right? Mm-hmm. Because that's part of his job on the ship, is helping navigate.
I'm going to read to you the title of this poem. And all you're going to do right now is think about the title. Put your attention here, please. And I want you to just think, what does this title alone tell me? Song from the Princess, Sweet and Low. What comes to mind when you hear that?
Well, let's think back to our last lesson last Tuesday. What was going on? We listened to one of his pieces of work called Angered Over a Penny Lost. Anger over a penny, a lost penny. Who can tell back from last week what we were talking about with him? Okay, Ainsley.
There was a penny.
So when he got elected president, how were things in our country, Maeve?
We were still in the Great Depression, and it was 1932. And he said to the people he would experiment. And from his first day in the White House, he did. At first he closed all the banks that were closed for 4 days and met with Congress to see what they could do to get their confidence back so that they could give everybody's life savings back.